You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm meteorologist Ed Keezer in with Dave Leake, coordinator of the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College. And we're here for another edition of Sky Guys. Our technical director this afternoon is Henry Frain. The producer for the Afternoon Magazine is Harriet Williamson. Thanks for joining us. It's been a few months since Dave and I have been here to talk about anything sky. So if you have any questions about weather, astronomy, stars, the planets, the clouds, anything like that, you can give us a call this afternoon. Our telephone numbers are 333-9455 and toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And we'll be taking your calls here for, oh, I don't know, about the next 45 minutes. Actually, I just realized I forgot to ask what time we're supposed to be out. I think it's around 1:50. So,
I bet they'll tell us.
I'm sure they'll tell us when it's time to go. They'll get one of those big canes and pull us right off the stage here. But anyway, welcome to Sky Guys and welcome, Dave. It's been a while since I've seen you here.
Yes, yes. It has been a while since we did this. So thanks for the opportunity.
And, of course, we're doing this not during a pledge show, but our pledge drive. We had the power hour this morning, and tomorrow through Tuesday, we do have the pledge drive going. And, of course, we want to urge people to support WILL during our pledge drive. Tomorrow at this time, it's one of my wife's favorite programs. It's the monthly show on dogs. And Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are always here on the first Friday of the month, and well, you talk about dogs and dog behavior. So
we're going to renew our pledge. In fact, I got all the stuff out yesterday, so hopefully that's being done today.
All right, thanks. Well, anyway, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to announce before we go to the phones?
No, let's just go ahead and see what people have on their mind. And if we want to talk about some shows, I know you got a tornado show coming up, so we want to make sure to talk about that. So.
Yeah, it's a week from tonight. Unbelievably, and we'll see if we actually pull it off.
You always seem to pull them off.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend, I can tell you that. Anyway, we do have a caller already, so we'll just go right to the phone lines. And our first caller is on line 4 from Geneva, Illinois, way up north. Welcome to Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine.
Hey, Sky Guys, how you doing today?
Good, how are
Pretty
you?
Pretty good.
It's kind of cloudy out here, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting cloudy again.
That's maybe good for him, bad for me.
It kind of clouded my thoughts here. No, I was wondering, just out of curiosity's sake, do you guys think the money they're spending on the Hubble Space Program and, you know, other things like that is worth it? And do you think it would be better spent maybe developing something more that's better that doesn't have to be maintained? Because I don't... To me, it makes no sense. The thing has to be serviced every so often, and it seems like it's more frequent and costs more money than it's worth. Is it worth all that money? Is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I can tell you this: I don't have a dollar figure in front of me, but you really have to look at things like that in the big perspective of things. I can't tell you right off the top of my head how much it costs to put the Hubble telescope up there. But, and of course, yes, it does have to be serviced, but, you know, my car has to be serviced too, though I don't need a space shuttle, I guess, to service my car. But it's a very, very, very small fraction of, if you look at what we're spending on, you know, weapon systems and things like that, it is, I think at one time NASA's budget was far less than 1% of what the government was spending overall. It's, yeah, when you see it, yeah, you know, I'm not going to say it's not a lot of money, you know, sure it is, but in the big picture of things, it really is kind of a drop in the bucket. It's not all that much.
It just seems like a lot of money. I mean, that if you talk to the military guys, because I've asked the same question, same thing comes out. It's like, okay, I'll just say I've asked this to three or four different people on four different budgets. So if you all say that it's just a small drop in a bucket, it's kind of hard to believe. You know, somewhere, somehow, somebody's got to give. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't. You know, I know some people that work at NASA. One of my good friends, in fact, a couple of people I know, my roommate, my old roommate from years ago, still works on the space shuttle program. They'll be exiting here soon. And they're developing another deal. But it just seems to me, you know, if you want to, like for astronomy, the way I was taught, and from what I understand of people, the way people are taught nowadays, two different entities, and it costs a lot more. I mean, how far do you tug it? How far do you go? I mean, somebody's got to give somewhere. We just can't keep forking out the bucks all the time for all this stuff. And I guess what bottom line, what's in it for me? What am I going to get out of besides looking at a pretty sky at night? I'll get off and listen. Thanks, guys.
thank you for your comments. And I guess that as I was listening here, since you're the astronomer and are more qualified than I to talk about this particular topic, what have we gotten from the Hubble Space Telescope? I know that there's been a lot of discoveries since it's been launched.
Yeah, well, two quick answers to that. One, just the space program in general. It's amazing some of the things that we've got from the space program. I mean, things like Velcro and Post-it notes and our cell phone technology and plasma TVs and all this technology that have just kind of filtered its way down.
And dang, the breakfast drink of
there
astronauts.
You go. And all that stuff, since NASA's kind of the forefront of technology, it all kind of filters down. So we're all really affected by it. So as far as the pretty pictures from Hubble, I guess the only answer I have to that is it's the same situation as if you went home at night and boarded up your windows and never went outside. Think of all the things that you're missing. Well, to confine ourselves to just looking at things on Earth, we're really learning a lot more about our Earth when you think of the Earth as just a data point, and you can compare it to, say, like Venus and Mars and Jupiter, and how does the Earth fit into that system? Why are we the way we are right now? And you can go on, as far as our galaxy, looking at others, and it just really helps to put things in perspective. So, is looking at a distant picture of a galaxy going to change the price of oil tomorrow? No, probably not. But it's a big picture kind of thing.
And did I read recently that there was a discovery that from another galaxy that there might be some gas that might show some signs that there could be life out there?
Oh, you're probably referring to this extrasolar planet going around another star. They found the first signature of something organic. It was we found methane. Of course, it's all through our solar system. We've actually found it in another one now.
Okay. So, and that was from the Hubble Space Telescope, or?
One of them. Yeah, I don't remember if it was that, or they've got the Spitzers up there, and it may have been the Spitzer Space Telescope, but.
Okay, well, that's an interesting start to the program, and I see now we've got a couple other callers on hold here as maybe that's prompted a little discussion. But if you have any questions about the sky, weather, or astronomy, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 1-800-222-9455. And we now go to line one. We have a listener from Mattoon calling in. Welcome to Sky Guys.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got a question on weather.
Okay.
It seems to me the last couple of months it's been an extremely wet period in our area, and according to my rain gauge, more than in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And just wondering, I hear people saying, oh, we're going to have a big drought this summer. We're going to have a big drought. It's going to be rough on the farmers. Is there something going on in the Pacific, on La Nina, or is there any credibility to some of these forecasts of a drought?
Well, my comment on that is, unfortunately, the first thing I could tell you is we don't know absolutely for sure what's going to happen once we get into the summer months, because you really can't make reliable forecast several months in advance. I think the one thing I definitely would say is those that are saying we're absolutely going to have a drought don't know what they're talking about. It's possible, but it's also possible we'll stay wet, and there's also a good possibility it'll be somewhere in between. But the bottom line is the fact that we've been wet all winter does not mean we're going to have a drought this summer. There's no correlation to that at all. Now, as far as what's going on in the Pacific Ocean, we had a La Nina over this past winter, and that's colder than average water temperatures of the Pacific Ocean near the equator, off the coast of South America, off of Peru and Ecuador. And it was a rather strong La Nina. And there are some correlations between the weather in the U.S. and La Nina in the wintertime, and that helped tilt the weather pattern to allowing us to have a wetter than average winter. And in a few places, right up in the top 3 to 5 wettest winters. And for the month of March, St. Louis did have the wettest March on record. So that in part, not completely, but in part might be due to La Nina. Now, the one thing that a lot of long-range prognosticators selling newsletters to farmers and such will do is they'll make the long-range forecast because they want to sell newsletters. And they will tell you that, oh, La Nina was here and was wet this winter, so therefore we'll have drought. But if we had El Nino, they'd tell you we would have drought. And if they said it was a neutral situation in the Pacific Ocean, we would have drought. Everything I've looked at over the years in the Midwest shows that there's very little, if any, correlation to the weather here based on El Nino, La Nina, or neither during the summertime, because those events in the Pacific Ocean are strongest during our winter. So as we go into the spring and summer, there's a lot of variables of which we can't even resolve all of them that will determine our ultimate weather. It does look like the weather pattern is going to stay relatively wet here for the next several weeks. It probably will get a little less wet after that. But then anything is possible as we go through the summer. I wish I had a definitive answer, but if I did have that, I'd be rich and famous right now. And
you are rich and famous.
And that's one thing I always tell people about long-range forecasts, because some will sell their forecast, and you know, a stop clock, the old kind with hands, is right twice a day. So if somebody forecasts a drought every year, they're going to hit it sometimes. And they're going to market that. But the bottom line is, if somebody was really, really good at making a forecast here at the beginning of April for the entire growing season through July and August, you would know that person's name. That mm-hmm. person would be well known to everybody, because that person would be the guru of weather. And I don't know any such person. So I would just say, if you're a farmer, and I'm guessing you might be if you're very concerned about the weather, you just got to make your decisions based on a variety of possibilities. And, of course, here, as we go through the growing season, we'll guide you along on WILL.
And the Atlantic last year, I heard that winds or sandstorms or something coming across Africa hitting the Atlantic affects our possibilities of hurricanes and that sort of thing.
Well, that would be one of many factors. Now, the La Nina, El Nino cycle does affect hurricanes a little more, so we'll have to watch out for that this year.
So nothing in the Atlantic really does much for our weather.
Well, the Atlantic cycles are much shorter in duration. So as far as making a long-range forecast, the oscillations of the water temperatures and circulations in the Atlantic Ocean can shift much more quickly. La Nina and El Nino are the longer-term stable anomalies in the water temperatures out in they're in the Pacific Ocean. But that's the one thing that you can kind of bank on when one of them forms, that it's going to last for several months. And that's why you hear about La Nina and El Nino. But I think the thing I'd like to just close this part of the conversation on with is, when we're looking at the weather that we get here in central Illinois, there are many, many parameters, or I like to say puzzle pieces, that go into making our weather. And El Nino and La Nina are, in the wintertime, bigger pieces to the puzzle, but still just some of the pieces to the puzzle. The atmosphere is very complex and operates on many different time and space scales, and there's no simple answers to this large complex problem. We do look at El Nino and La Nina for climate forecasting, and especially closer to the Pacific Ocean and closer to the equator, because La Nina and El Nino have a bigger impact there. But it, unfortunately, you can't just take those parameters or even some ocean currents in the Atlantic Ocean and say, okay, that means our weather will be this. Long-range forecasting will never be an exact science.
Well, thank you.
I hope it helps. Thank you for your call, and We're going to move right along. Time is flying by already, and we have a caller now on line two from Champaign. Welcome to Sky Guys.
Hello.
Hi.
One comment, and then I've got a couple of questions. The guy who wrote in, who called in about the cost of the Hubble telescope, that really baffles me to hear that kind of comment, because if you think of all the money that's expended on symphony orchestras around the United States, you could ask the same question. You know, why do it? It's not worth it, because very few people really appreciate symphony music. But at any rate, that's my comment.
Look at all the money that's in baseball.
Yeah, but there you go. That's even better. But my question is two parts. One of them is, who's the fellow up there at Parkland that runs the planetarium?
That would be Dave.
I was going to say, yeah.
Dave?
I know that idiot.
Dave,
yeah, that's me.
What's your last name?
Dave Leake.
Leak, L-E-E-K.
E on the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, with an E on the end. Okay. The other question I have is, how often do annular eclipses of the moon occur?
Oh, my. Okay. Well, there's a chance for a couple of times a year that we have an eclipse. That doesn't always mean it will happen. And, of course, you have to be in the right spot to see something like that.
But I'm talking about an annular one.
Yeah, an annular, of course, so the moon is just a little bit farther away and doesn't quite cover up the sun. And I'm not going to fib to you. I know we just had one of those not too long ago, but I'd have to pop on the internet to figure out when the next one's going to be.
Yeah, is it possible to use a planetarium to figure out where and when annular eclipses occurred in the past?
In theory, yes. I know ours, our particular Carl Zeiss machine, gives us a pretty accurate star field, but even the Carl Zeiss people in Germany will tell you, since we got the first of this particular kind, if you get picky, our moon is not in the exact spot that it's supposed to be. So it'd be difficult to actually do eclipses with that. Probably the best way is there's lots of software packages where you can put in your latitude and longitude and run back and see things like that. There's a gentleman, his name is, and I have to see if I can spell it, it's Fred Espenak, E-S-P-E-N-A-K, at NASA, has got a wonderful eclipse site. That's the one that I use. In fact, if you go to the planetarium website, which is linked off parkland.edu, we've got a links page, and it's on there.
Okay, give me that once again.
Again, the Parkland page is parkland.edu.
Okay.
And then from there, go to planetarium, and then off of our front page is we have a links page, and I put it on there myself, so I know it's there. But it's
Espenak, huh?
Yeah, and it's I think I'm pronouncing that right. I never met the man, so I'm not positive. Yeah. But, yeah, to me, he's got some of the best information.
Yeah.
Good question, though.
I've got a couple of publications in archaeoastronomy, and I'm pursuing a problem that I want to get together with somebody about. But anyway, I may get in touch with you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call on Sky Guys here on WILL AM 580. And our phone numbers, if you have any questions about astronomy or weather, anything related to the sky, 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. And I believe our next phone call is coming from a listener in Eureka on line four. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Over the last couple months, about every week or so, there seems to be some report that either Greenland, or I know in the last week there was one, a iceberg from the Antarctic Peninsula had broken off that they claimed was something like seven times the size of Manhattan. Do you see any of this as evidence of climate change?
Well, I think that it has to be, okay, as far as climate change, yeah, I think that's evidence that there's some climate change, because they're obviously these things weren't breaking off at the rate that they are now, so those places have warmed up a bit. So I think that, to just put it simply, climate change, yes. And I'm not a climate expert, but everything I've read does point to that.
Do you see the rate at which the increase has surged in the last while as maybe more dramatic evidence of that, or is that still yet to be sifted through when the data needs to be looked at a little bit more closely?
That's something that I am not the expert to talk to about because, it depends on who you talk to, really. And I've got some friends that I respect in the field, and some are sounding alarm bells and others are not. And they're respectable people, all of them. And, you know, it's one of those things that scientifically, I don't think it's proven. But on the other hand, sometimes you can't wait necessarily for proof on everything either. So there, it's basically that does run the spectrum right now as far as the rate is concerned. And so that is a problem that it's hard to talk about because you don't want to sit there and do nothing if there's a serious situation. But on the other hand, you don't want to hit a panic button unnecessarily either. And I think that thus the debate and the problem. But the climate is changing. There's definitely evidence in the Arctic of warming. I was up in Alaska two summers ago, and that's not all being made up. It's definitely going on. The Arctic Ocean this past summer had more ice melt than any time observed previously. Now, previously only goes back a few decades as far as satellite measurements, but the Northwest Passage opened up this past summer. It did freeze very quickly, though, this fall, too. So it was a very cold winter up there. We've had one of the coldest, most snow-covered winters across North America here in a few decades. So that's what makes it very difficult. There's climate change, but it doesn't affect all places equally. And Antarctica, this winter, our winter, their summer, seems to be having more of the ice breaking off the glaciers than in some of the past years. And I don't know, this isn't your area, is it? I would say to Dave here.
I'm just sitting here smiling.
What one could accurately say that it's changing at a very uneven rate.
Well, I think that's always the case, though. When you look at global climate change and you're trying to assess how much the temperature of the globe has increased, say, over the last few decades or century, you're getting a global average temperature. That doesn't mean that every place on the globe is warming at an even rate. In fact, with climate change, some places will probably turn colder. It's just the average temperature of the globe has been warming up a bit. But that is so really the easy part would be to measure that and say, okay, the globe is warming up. We have global warming, if you care to call it that. I like to refer to it as climate change because not every place is warming up evenly. And in fact, some places aren't warming up. But then you get into the more complex problem. What are the impacts going to be, and where are they going to be most dramatic? So, yeah, it is uneven, but I think it's always been uneven.
Thank you.
So that makes it difficult, and I might have more comments if we have time later, but we still have a few phone calls to take. We're at the midway point of the program. You're listening to Sky Guys on the Afternoon Magazine. I'm WILL meteorologist Ed Kieser, along with Dave Leak, who is the coordinator of the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College. And we're taking your calls on anything related to the sky, weather, astronomy, anything like that. And we welcome you to call us at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. And we are going to go to a cell phone right now. And line one, line one is now in Urbana. I guess moved to a landline. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was wondering, is there a place that you can download data, like for temperature data at increments during the day, like every 10 minutes, half an hour or something? I know on the WILL website you can download current data and highs and lows, but can you get like a set of a lot of data for a day or week?
Not easily. I think that you can get hourly data, but only for maybe a few days for airports around the country. The National Weather Service, I know the Lincoln site, if you go to their website, the National Weather Service in Lincoln, and the easiest way to find that is you just go to weather.gov and then click on the U.S. map on the central Illinois, and it'll go to their website. And on the right side, where it lists observations, you can click on that, and then there's a clickable map of Illinois, and you can click on any station you want. I think the Atmospheric Sciences Department here at the U of I also maintains a chart of Willard Airport data that you can click on. But the problem with 10-minute data, well, I don't think it's easy to find 10-minute data unless you have your own weather station recording every 10 minutes. But you can get hourly data, but only for a few days because it really just clogs up computer space. So most places purge it after a couple of days. So if you want longer-term data than that, I don't know where you can get better than hourly. I do know that the national... If you have a research project, you could get more frequent data maybe from the National Climate Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina, NCDC, but that could cost you money. I know some .gov and .edu sites have more access to free data than other domains. So if you're working at a university or a government site, there is some data available from there. But depending on the resolution of data, usually the higher the resolution the data, the more likely it's going to take some time to get it, and the more it's going to cost you.
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And that's something I'm looking for sometimes myself, is weather data on the web, because we get a lot of questions about that. Well, we have a caller now on line two. And this caller is from Champaign. Go ahead. Welcome to Sky Guys.
Hi. How are you gentlemen doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. I had a kind of a quick question for Mr. Leek.
Mm-hmm.
I teach a lot of young men, mostly, maybe through the Boy Scouts, on orienteering and also through navigating via using, you know, landmarks, sky landmarks, stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is that anything that you've done in the past, or is that a service that you would consider providing for especially the young people of the community?
Well, there's a couple things we do. One, I mean, it's more of a public program, but just about every Friday nights we do kind of a backyard sky show at the planetarium. It's called Prairie Skies. The other thing is coming up next month in May, we actually are doing a couple of Boy Scout astronomy merit badge workshops, where we actually go through all the requirements, and it's not a show. You don't sit back and just, you know, let me do all the talking. It actually is a workshop. We get them down on the floor, you know, doing projects and things underneath our dome. So we do something like that. And this fall, we're going to do a public workshop, a 5-week workshop on something like that. But just beyond that, you know, sometimes if I can work it in, if somebody's doing an event, sometimes if I can make it, I'll go out and we can point out a few things. We did that at Camp Drake a couple of times. And
okay, it used to work out at Camp Drake at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that is something I found that it's not really easy to teach or easy to provide resources for. So that's good to know.
That's true. We do have for each season, right now just the spring one's up there, but from the Planetarium website, we do have a star chart that you can download. So, and copy is for as many as you want. So you can use that as a resource. It's, you can get star charts from the library, but this one has the current planets on it since they move around. You know, a star chart from last spring is not going to have the planets in the right spot as this spring. So, but we'll and then when summer gets here in June, we'll put a summer one up there too. So feel free to use that.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. And again, you're listening to Sky Guys. Good to get some questions on astronomy and weather here. And our phone number, we're only on now for another 15 minutes or so. You can give us a call at 9455. That's 333-WILL if you want to use the letters on your keypad there. Our call letters are the last four numbers. Toll free, we're at 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. And I thought I'd take a moment here and maybe go through a couple of things that we have coming up here.
Yeah, yeah. I know you've got your tornado show, too. And let's see, that is that the 10th? Is that right?
10th. It's 1 week from today, our annual tornado show, the 18th year of doing this. And it will be at 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 10th at the Beckman Institute Auditorium in Urbana, the same place we've had it most of the last few years. And it's free.
And the video is amazing. If you like video images of tornadoes, I know you've got some really good stuff.
And we try to work in some new stuff every year, and but keep some of the old classics in there every year as well. I will say that for this next year, we have some new video, although some of the bigger tornadoes just don't have good video. The worst tornado last year, there was an EF5. Hadn't had one of those in a while. It was in Greensburg, Kansas, but it hit after dark. So I've seen some video clips of just when the lightning shows it as a monster tornado, but not really a photogenic one.
Wasn't the one in Atlanta, wasn't it?
Yeah. We don't really have video of the tornado, but do have some damage. And it proves that tornadoes do hit cities.
Mm-hmm.
That is a myth that we try to dispel in that show. Tornadoes do hit cities. It's just that the reason you don't hear about downtowns getting hit much, think of the square mileage of a downtown area versus the rest of the landscape. It's quite small.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not protected from tornadoes if you live in a city. Well, we have a caller on line one from Rockford, and we'll get back to more of our promotions or whatever you want to say, what's coming up in a moment. But anyway, we'll go to line one in Rockford right now. You're on Sky Guys. Good afternoon.
Howdy. Yes, I have received information from a bunch of scientists that are studying this global warming, and they have pretty much proved that we are not having global warming due to greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide. And there's a website, and there's quite a study of this that I think some people ought to look at.
Well,
and I don't know if I can give you that website. There's more graphs and data than I can describe on the telephone here.
Well, you can give the website. I will just say this. Again, I don't want to turn this into a global warming show because that's not my area of expertise. And I do know that there are scientists out there that say it's not happening due to greenhouse gases. I know there are scientists that say it's happening quickly because of greenhouse gases. And, you know, as long as I want to just make sure that we have all points of view. We're not going to say that, oh, just because somebody says this, that means that's that. I guess
right.
I'll leave it there. But if you have a quick website, you're allowed to say what it is, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, well, it's the typical HTTP /www, and it's oism.org/pproject/s. 33p36.htm.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff there.
Now, after that ORG, there's two P's. It's ORG/PPROJECT. But it's a petition project, Environmental Effects of Increased Atmospheric Carbon Dioxide. And there's a good abstract, and there's graphical data of analysis, all kinds of analysis that's been made on this.
Well, I'm sure that there's been some good analyses made. I'm also sure that not everybody would agree with it. I haven't looked at it yet. It's a controversial topic, and but certainly we welcome the different points of view on the program here, and we thank you for calling.
Yeah, they've analyzed the sea surface temperature based on the Sargasso Sea, 2 million square mile area, and they've done analysis of the various ice ages and graphed this out, and it's also showing the effect of the increased solar radiation. They're not saying there isn't global warming, but they're showing that it's apparently not so much due to carbon dioxide as it is some other things.
Well, we'll take a look at that, and like I said, sure, I'm not going to comment on it because I haven't seen it.
I wrote that down, too. And just keep one thing in mind. I haven't seen this either, but they even let me have a website. So anybody can have a website.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your call and your points of view. And we will go on to line two in Urbana, and then I think I'm going to have a few comments. But anyway, go ahead, line two.
Just a caution about this website. A while back, somebody sent me one of these, and I did what you should always do. I Googled the people who were running the website, and I found out they worked for oil companies.
Ah, so you Googled, and then you giggled.
Then I giggled very hard.
So
he had published, yes, but all of his publications were from the in-house press that he was running.
Not a like a refereed
Nothing
journal.
Nothing was refereed. It sounds very much like this, but I don't know that it is. I'm sure there are many of them. So when you get something like this, go to one of the fact-checking indices, and if you simply put the name of the website or of the people that are running the website, the supposed experts into it, and you Google it, you're going to get some information.
Now, you know, in science, it just doesn't matter what the field, but it's good to be skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'm sitting here skeptical with all of it, because I'm not the expert in this area.
I'm not either, but I think about 95% of the experts agree that there is global warming, that it is due to the, at least partially due to the greenhouse effect. So,
well, yeah, I think the question is how much. I think partially at least, and global warming, there is climate change going on with the temperature warming on a global average. I think that's clear. I think just what all the concern about is how much, and more or less people being worried about, okay, where are we taking our resources?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I always enjoy your program.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And now it's my time to get in trouble.
Uh-oh. What are you going to do?
Well, I get asked about global warming a lot, and I don't have all the answers, but the one thing that I've thought about over time is this. I mean, it gets back down here to, you know, we've had the last two calls referring to using of greenhouse or carbon. And, you know, one caller says, well, it's not due to increased carbon in the atmosphere. And, of course, carbon dioxide has increased dramatically in the last half century or so. The amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is steadily increasing. That is proven. There's no question about it. The question is it really causing major problems? It is, of course, a gas that absorbs infrared radiation emitted by the Earth, and it emits some back to the Earth. So logically, you would say that the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and carbons would have a warming effect. But yet we have people out there that are on all ends of the spectrum, from where this is doing nothing to if we don't stop it immediately, we're going to reach this tipping point and go into a complete climate disaster here in the next few years. You know, those are the extremes. And probably the answer is somewhere in the middle. But again, I'm not the expert and don't know that. But what I do know is this. You know, politically, a lot of people look at one of the two, what I'll call E's. Some are looking at the economy. Others are looking at the environment. Mm-hmm. And it seems over my lifetime so far, there's just been this, they've just been diametrically opposed. You're either for the environment or you're for the economy, and the two, one will destroy the other. And I don't think that that's true. And I think we're at a point now with the increase in oil prices that going to alternative fuels is something that we have to do as a country and the world. We just have to do it. We cannot rely on oil, and especially foreign oil, for the rest of time. And if we get off that and get onto environmentally friendly fuels and energy, you know, then we're taking care of the environment, but now also the economy. Mm-hmm. And as far as carbon goes, whether it's a pollutant, which used to not be considered pollution, but a lot of our carbon emissions come from combustion, which also adds a lot of pollutants to the atmosphere. So it stands to reason that we should be cutting back on that anyway, whether you believe that carbon, adding carbon to the air, is a problem or not. And the one thing I'm going to say right now is I challenge everybody to stop using drive-through windows. I just wonder how much how much we would save in energy cost, how much we would save in polluting the atmosphere if people didn't sit at drive-through windows at restaurants, banks, and so on.
You sit a long time.
Just spewing out carbon and other pollutants. And I don't use drive-through windows unless the inside is closed. I tend to go inside my bank. I tend to go inside restaurants. And besides, then you're getting off your butt and getting some exercise too. That's where I'm going to take this. What can you do as an individual? Stop using drive-through windows. Go out there and get out of the car, turn the car off, and go inside like we used to do when we were kids, when there were no drive-through windows. And by the way, I used to work at a McDonald's restaurant long ago, and I think the place went downhill when they opened the drive-through window. I actually worked at one before they had a drive-through, and that kind of...
Well, it kind of gets back almost to the economy, because what do we use drive-throughs for? It's convenience.
Yes.
Can you give up a little convenience in order to make these gains? I gave up drive-through several years ago when, I won't say the name of the restaurant chain, but I went and got a burger and got 3 miles down the highway and there was no meat on it.
Oh, it great. Was
just, so it's like, okay, that's it. No more drive-throughs for me.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's my feeling. So wherever you happen to be as an individual on the global warming climate change topic, I think that it doesn't hurt us, certainly, to try to cut back on greenhouse gas emissions, and especially, the carbon dioxide, because even if it's not throwing a pollutant into the air that's making us breathe bad air, there's other pollutants going into the air during the combustion process. So you clean up the air, you use a lot less energy, you save yourself some money, and over time, and then you also may be a little healthier just walking around a little more. So to me, that's a win-win-win-win-win.
Drive-thrus just for bicycles.
There you go. There you go. Well, anyway, we have a quick question now. We're running low on time. We're going to go to Farina on line 4. Go ahead.
Hi, am I on?
You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for letting me talk for a minute. I never blame the consumer. Gee whiz, never blame the consumer. It is the big corporations that are making these multi-million and billion-dollar profits off our backs. Never blame the consumers.
I don't think he was blaming the
consumers. And that's all I wanted to really say today.
Okay, thanks for your call.
I don't think he was blaming the consumers. It was just the idea that I can't do anything about the big corporations as I sit here right now, but I can still make my own little contribution. I think that's what Ed was doing.
Yeah, although I will say, if you sit in a drive-through window for 10 minutes spewing out emissions, don't complain about the environment. That's all I'll say. You know, you don't have the right to complain about the environment being dirty if you're sitting there spewing out the pollutants. But some may say, I don't care about the environment, and then, you know, that's okay. But I'm just saying there is a lot of hypocrisy out there. But I wasn't blaming the consumers. I was, as Dave was saying, my point is, what can we as individuals do? And I'll go a step further. If don't support corporations that you think are bad. You know, I know sometimes we have to buy oil. for example. But there are some oil companies that are more responsible than others. Maybe none of them are as responsible as we'd like them to be, but you know, you can pick where you shop and what you buy. And, you know, I don't want to blame the consumers, and that's not what I was doing. Well, anyway, we're just about out of time. I just want to mention one thing that you and I are doing together in a few weeks.
Yeah, April 24th, Rocket Into Space out at the Starkle Planetarium is a cooperative thing. WILL, Parkland College, and a lot of other groups, the Champaign-Urbana Libraries, and we're going to have some great stuff. Central Illinois Aerospace is going to launch a rocket. There's going to be lots of stuff for the kids to do, the younger kids, in continuous activities. We're going to do a planetarium show. Starts at 5 o'clock, runs till 7:38, and should be a lot of fun. And you're going to be there too, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be there with you. We'll do some sort of live Sky Guys
thing. Sky Guys live remote in the dome. How's that?
Live in the dome. There you go. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you know what? Our time is up.
Wow, that went fast.
Yeah, it did. And your mother didn't even call from Decatur today.
I say hi, Mom, anyway.
Well, anyway, that's this edition of Sky Guys. Again, our producer for the show is Harriet Williamson. Our technical director, Henry Frain. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening. We'll do it again probably in a few months.